Coming up on Patriots This Week. 'Twas the day before Christmas, and all through Gillette, the Patriots were primed for the Bills' best effort yet.
And Benjamin lays out and makes the catch. It's ruled a touchdown.
Me and some of the Bills guys. Yeah, I told him it wasn't a catch.
While replays sometimes takes, it's always better to receive. And this Patriots gift was another reason to believe.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
So 8 straight years, the Pats have won 12 in a season. And Gronk thinks he knows what's the real reason.
You think about it, I got here 8 years ago, so maybe that's the reason.
That's right now on Patriots This Week.
And hi, everyone. A very happy new year. Welcome to Patriots This Week. Great to have you before this regular season finale, which marks our final show of the year. Bob Soucy joined by Paul Prillo from Patriots Football Weekly, sitting in for Scott Zolak, alongside 3-time Super Bowl champion Matt Chatham. And Zoe has escaped the Arctic blast ahead for the Sunshine State, so we can question his toughness, but maybe this week not his intelligence.
Pretty soon I'm just going to start yelling stuff at random times. Be prepared.
Well, a lot of people, not necessarily yelling, but certainly making it known on social media the last week after the Pittsburgh Steelers released James Harrison. They wanted to see the Patriots sign him, and that they did.
I thought it was a move that made a lot of sense immediately. Where are the Patriots really hurting in terms of depth? On the edges, the run defense has been troublesome, the inability to get consistent pressure on the passer. Now, I don't know what James Harrison has left. I mean, he's been around an awful long time. He hasn't played a lot of football this year, but I do know he's a pretty angry guy and a pretty spiteful guy. So maybe if he can drum up, what are we looking for here? 4 games, if all goes well, I think it was a home run.
I think sometimes lack of use doesn't necessarily mean lack of ability to help you in a limited role. I look at James Harrison, and I think, you know what, people are going to look at it and say, situational rusher. I think it's less than that. I think it's big, strong bull that can set the edge, and I think that's more a missing issue than an edge rusher. So, and I think in a limited role, especially when you get a little older, that's the thing you lose, the burst that turn the corner. You don't lose the ability to press a tight end. You don't lose the ability to press a tackle and make sure they don't get outside of you. You don't have to make the play. You just have to set a pillar on the edge, and I think he'll be really good in that particular role. Plus, I think the guys who've had some issues in edge setting are the Lees and some of those guys who are new to it. The stuff they've done best is actually the situational rushing. It's the other thing. So I think it's really a nice fit at the right time.
Sean McDermott of the Bills in a 3-3 game, as we look back on last week's matchup of the Pats in Buffalo, decided to go for it on 4th and short. Patriots got the stop, but then Tom Brady turned it over. How is that symptomatic of the problems the Patriots' offense has been experiencing, especially over the middle these days?
Yeah, very uncharacteristic rut right now that Tom is in. You know, he protects the ball as well as any quarterback really that has played. And all of a sudden you're looking at, 6 interceptions over the last 5 games. First time, Matt, since 2002 that they've thrown picks in 5 games in a row. I mean, you were playing then. Yeah. That's how long ago that was. I don't really have a complete, you know, definitive answer for it. I didn't think pressure was an issue this week. I thought the offensive line really held up. I think generally when he's throwing interceptions, he's not comfortable in the pocket. That wasn't the case on Sunday. But he's fighting through whatever it is. I think he's, you know, his accuracy has gone away. I think he got fooled a little bit on this particular play with Jordan Poyer.
He jumped that route really well. I mean, he was a full stride ahead. So he had read Tom. So he knew where he was coming back to. I think the other portion here is I hold this one a little different than previous weeks. This was a Brit thing. And it's new. It's newness. It's not that, you know, Tom led him to coverage, which it kind of looked like these are the option routes where you sit. Yeah. And it's almost as if he's running a curl. It's like, don't run to coverage is what they usually tell us. You know, don't, in these times where you have options to sit it down, last thing you want is go to the guy when you're uncovered. But, you know, Tom's kind of like, okay, you're going there. And then, yes, I don't think he read the safety behind it. So I think it's a little bit of familiarity with the guy, getting used to him, and him knowing that you need to sit that thing.
But how concerned should we be projecting about the inability to make big plays on the outside for this team of late?
Well, one guy in particular I would point to is Brandon Cooks, and I think he's been very quiet. Really, go back maybe to the Mexico game where he had a huge game against Oakland. I don't know if it's just as simple as he struggles in man press coverage or if it seems to me that he's one of those guys, if you can get him down the field and Tom can throw the ball and he can sort of run under it, he's much more effective. If you're throwing a lot of, you know, the shallow crosses, the quick slants, the quick outs, and they're all hands catches, I don't think he's as effective. I don't think he necessarily likes to work in traffic. I don't think he has shown an ability maybe to fight for the ball. as well in traffic. But then you look at the end of the year, he's been very productive. Yeah. I mean, he's over 1,000 yards again. He's come here and basically done what we all thought he would do.
Yeah.
He's provided a downfield element for the team on a reasonably consistent basis.
I think we would have seen more out of Brandon Cooks if there'd still been a Julian Edelman here. If Julian's sucking up possessions at the sticks, and Brandon can be a little more diverse. Now it's sort of a reliance on something that's not necessarily his strongest suit. His strongest suit's the go-get-it stuff.
How do you rank that catch by Gronk? He had the one against Denver going across the middle, reaching up and behind several years ago, but the play that he made inside the pylon one-handed for a touchdown that got the Pats even on the Bills, amazing.
To watch a guy that size, yeah. You know, what's it, 6'6", 265-ish, to reach out with one hand, and I've seen a million one-handed catches.
Yeah.
But this is a one-handed catch while spinning around and somehow getting 2 feet inbounds around the pylon. I just think that we sometimes, as great as Gronkowski is, and I don't think there's any question he's the best tight end I've ever seen, but I think we underrate how athletic he is.
Yeah,
and, you know, you just look and say, oh, he's just this big guy who dominates because of his size. That's not the only reason he dominates. He's just such a gifted athlete.
Yeah, we've seen this for years, right, where his sort of persona with the dunk stuff and, you know, the slam of the football and everything's about his aggressiveness and running over people and everything. But he can pirouette, and that's what makes him hard to cover, because when you've seen other big guys. Seattle's tried the bigger, longer, taller linebacker against him, and he just runs away from him. You know, he just separates from him. He's just more agile in his lower half. So the body control that Gronk had there to turn himself without needing to pull down and to snatch it and pull it to himself, not tap it, to snatch it. I mean, that's everything. That's every element there. That was pretty cool.
Now, meanwhile, the Buffalo Bills felt they had a highlight reel touchdown catch of their own. And by the end of the afternoon, everybody else around the NFL outside of New England crying foul once again. Reminder, we have limited time.
Sure.
Your reaction to the Calvin
the
Benjamin
Clay catch,
non-touchdown catch in the corner.
the Charles Clay catch ended up on the ground, so that's a whole different thing. This to me, and I've seen, you know, Matt and I have argued about it off air, and we're probably going to argue about it now. I've seen a million angles. I have not seen the, it was obvious that he didn't control the ball until he brought it all the way to his chest that they've been trying to sell us. I thought he had control of the ball with 2 feet down, and I've yet to see a replay that shows any different. But to me, the bigger issue here is that I don't think replay is doing what it's intended to do. It's supposed to correct egregious mistakes, but I don't think we'd be sitting here arguing if they had upheld that touchdown catch. I don't think anybody in New England would be arguing.
First view, it looks like a catch. Second view, okay, it's not. So what I think, and I think that's what you reasonably are going to get from an official on the field, because you got one set of eyes, you can only concentrate one of two places. You had to know when he's tapping, when possession happened here, but also simultaneously see feet. No human can do that, especially if you're guarded by a 6'6 guy's body if he happens to sit at the wrong angle. So I don't like the idea of overweighing his original call when we know he's guessing. He's not saying definitively, because he can't possibly humanly know definitively. So since he has to guess, I love that the camera allows you to go get it right. Now, I understand a time component. That's something I would argue for. I don't want it to be 5 minutes, right? I think when I had it myself on my own, you know, the DVR to be able to go back, I think you could solve that in 2 minutes' time. And I think if at that point you haven't, all right, stop. But I think the reason people got fooled on this, or the people didn't see it as clear, is because people, I think, are counting possession incorrectly. Possession is not the moment where his finger touches it and it first touches fabric. Possession is once it's squeezed to his body and controlled. People were looking at this and saying the toe's not there. That's the problem. Possession happens a couple frames later, and it's extremely clear. It is obvious that his toe's off the ground.
I'm just thankful that Gronk didn't have the same burden of having to bring it to his body. He caught the ball out here, and he had it.
Caught it clean.
So this is what it comes down to. Frame by frame, pellet by pellet.
Yeah.
In this day and age of the NFL.
And that's why it's broke.
In the field goal try from 50 yards out that went awry for the Buffalo Bills and opened the door for the Patriots to pull away. Sean McDermott, now down 7, decides to kick a field goal. That decision came back to betray the Bills.
I look at it and I just say, when I'm playing the New England Patriots, especially in Foxborough, what is my best course of action? Do I think I have more of a chance of success trying to stop Tom Brady in the offense or trying to move the ball on the defense?
Right.
And I think we'd all three agree,
right. Unlike
replay, that the best chance we'd try to move the ball.
That's your chance.
You got to get a yard. You're on the 32-yard line with 13 minutes left. You played a pretty good game. You probably, frankly, deserve better than what you were in, losing 23-16 at the time. You know, with all the different things that had happened, I thought it was a poor choice by the coach who didn't really give his team a chance to win.
So the Pats do prevail 37-16 in another 12-win season. That's 8 in a row for New England, another post-merger record. Back with more right after this on Patriots This Week.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam Investments, proud partner of the New England Patriots, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork. By Pepsi, the official soft drink of the New England Patriots. And by Waste Management. Find out why 4 out of 5 customers recommend Waste Management for their waste disposal needs.
This week's Putnam Player Spotlight is on Malcolm Brown. The 6'2", 320-pound D lineman played the role of game-changer against the Bills. Brown's third-quarter sack of Tyrod Taylor for a 15-yard loss was the key moment as the Patriots wrestled momentum away from the Bills. And the 2015 first-round draft choice added an exclamation point when he stopped Mike Tolbert for no gain on the next play. The Putnam Player Spotlight is brought to you by Putnam Investments, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork.
Welcome back inside our Bob's Discount Furniture Studios. We continue on Patriots This Week with our bank shots, welcoming in Don Banks. And Don, happy holidays.
Happy holidays, Bob.
Now, many around the NFL feel the Patriots got a gift on Christmas Eve once again when Alberto Riveron, the head of officials back in New York, in concert with Craig Rolstad, overturned a Calvin Benjamin catch. What are going to be the ramifications for Riveron in particular?
Well, you've heard the phrase one and done. I fear that maybe Al's tenure as the replay czar could be one and done. Look, it's one thing when Dean Blandino, Mike Pereira come out and criticize his calls and his interpretations of the replay. It's another thing when you have an owner in Buffalo's Terry Pegula. You have Stephen Jones and Mike Tomlin last week, competition committee members both saying that they think the replay review process or the catch rule needs to be tightened up. I think there's some serious heat on Al Riveron at this point, and I think he has kind of become an activist judge, if that's the phrase that fits, in overinterpreting some of these replay reviews.
A lot of people taking another look at the MVP race with the emergence this season of Todd Gurley and Sean McVay's offense. Tom Brady has been a leading candidate. Even Rob Gronkowski, I think, of late has introduced himself in the conversation. But Gurley, a running back, having a sensational year.
It takes a sensational year for a running back to get into this discussion. And I'm one of the 50 voters for the Associated Press, so I'm watching. I can't remember another race where I thought Week 17 was more important. To be honest, Brady has lost momentum. Obviously, 5 straight games with interceptions for the first time in 15 years. Gurley has finished strong, and sometimes finishing strong is really the key to winning this thing. But I have a sense that Gurley might be in the pole position right now.
Which is the more wide-open race, NFC or AFC, as it shapes up right now, 2 weeks away from the start of the playoffs?
It's clearly the NFC, and obviously, if Atlanta gets it done this week at home against Carolina, that conference is going to have 6 double-digit win teams in the playoffs. That hasn't happened for any conference since 2012. Both AFC and NFC that year put 6 double-digit win teams in the playoffs. So I think it's a wide-open race. I could make a case, a Super Bowl case, for at least 5 of the NFC teams. I can't really get past 2, maybe 3 in the AFC.
Hear a lot of people speculating about maybe the potential of a Baltimore or Seattle making a run. If those teams still in contention get in, are they among the favorites, among the lower seeds, to surprise the so-called favorites?
I think they have to be, because obviously Baltimore has shown it's not intimidated to play a Pittsburgh or a New England. They've beaten both in some high-pressure situations. I'm not saying that they're going to be favorites, but if there's teams that could make some noise, I'll take Baltimore. And then Seattle, obviously, is not in playoff position at the moment. But if they win at home against Arizona and the Falcons lose at Carolina, I don't think there's a lot of NFC teams that will be happy in celebrating that the Seahawks are back in the NFC playoffs.
And I'd suggest that you seriously consider downloading the Cover 2 podcast and reading Don's work online. Don, thanks so much for your insights all season long.
Thanks, Bob.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Don Banks with us, back with Matt and Paul right after this on Patriots This Week.
It's the Nozo Show. We're calling it the Chatham Chalkboard this week. It's Jets week number 2. We're going to go a little Robbie Anderson, number 11, wide receiver, second year player from Temple, big play guy. Here you're getting pressed, middle of the field safety. He has the speed to stack and get on top of the route. All the clips you're going to see today, all stacking and getting on top of the route. This guy's great speed, he's lithe, and here we're seeing off coverage, still able to stack and get on top of that route as well. Has to be played high to low, and you have to respect his speed at the top of the route. Malcolm Butler, all these guys, sometimes safeties even buzzing inside, has an extra help player, splits the double, still makes the play. Great ball skills down the field. Robbie Anderson in an offense that don't do a lot with Bryce Petty. He's one guy you got to take off the field. No Zoe Show this week. That's your Chatham Chalkboard.
The Zoe Show is presented by Pepsi, the official soft drink of the New England Patriots.
Back in the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios, just saw a lot of Robbie Anderson and guys talking about this week's opponent, the New York Jets. Big problem for them since McCown went down especially is somebody to get Anderson the ball, and Bryce Petty has struggled toward that end, but he's going to make his second straight late-season start here in Foxborough against the Pats.
Yeah, and it can't go much worse than the first one did, if you recall that one around this time last year. I think the Jets have played relatively hard down the stretch. I thought they put a good effort in New Orleans a couple of weeks ago, and certainly, the Chargers are playing for their playoff lives. It's a 14-7 game, and they had the ball, throwing the ball into the end zone at the end with, a chance to tie. You can get the ball inside the 20, and then you need to make a play to move it into the end zone, and Bryce Petty hasn't done that.
I know he was a year younger, but he hasn't had a ton of experience this season either. Three snaps against the Patriots last year, sacked twice and threw a pick. I felt sorry for him. I mean, at some point I was like,
laugh, but,
yeah,
was
but you were like, this kid's not ready. Like, what's he doing out there, And yeah. And the notion that he goes and wins a camp battle and he becomes the backup, but it's him or Christian Hackenberg who they were completely unwilling to put on the field a year later, which is kind of crazy for a second-year player. At some point, you have to at least give him a shot in a situation like this. Now, I would say from a Patriots standpoint, if you're looking at this game, if Josh McCown was playing, I feel entirely different. I mean, they're fighters. They grind. They make the game ugly. They do win situationally. The defense has actually had a pretty solid month relative to what's been going on around them offensively. But as soon as McCown went away, the threat of the Jets kind of did as well.
And you got to think the Patriots will focus a lot of their energies on stopping Bilal Powell, who's coming off another very productive day on the ground.
Yeah, and, a little bit more of a between-the-tackles guy. And we talked earlier about, the problems the Patriots have had on the edges. So, I think Malcolm Brown has played really well since coming back from his injury. I thought he was quiet earlier in the season. But since he came back from this ankle problem, I think he looks like a different guy. The interior with him and Lawrence Guy, I think, have really done a nice job sort of replacing Alan Branch. And that's been pretty stout. So that's where Bilal Powell wants to do his damage.
One guy that I think deserves sort of the tip of the cap, Ricky Jean-Francois, who had to, sit out of the NFL for a week and come back and play. He had limited snaps a week ago, but they were all really good snaps.
Yeah.
He did a really nice job, which is impressive when you're in and out of a lineup. But I think that's why it helps, much like the Harrison situation, to have a vet that can kind of flip that switch on, provided his body is right.
And, Matt, you mentioned the Jets' defense. They're playing well, even with the absence of Muhammad Wilkerson, who, for all intents and purposes, has been benched the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think it's still a plucky group, and I think it also underscores the point that if you're playing solidly across the crew, all-stars don't matter as much. Now, no one would argue if you just want to ISO Muhammad Wilkerson, he's better than what you put him behind him. But if you have some sort of issue with continuity in the group, if he's showing up to meetings late, which has been sort of his thing recently, there's as much value as keeping the group together and supplementing down a spot, and your unit can still play at a high level. But I give them a lot of credit. They're tough, they're ball aware, they rush the passer okay, but there's no more Sheldon Richardson, there's no more Wilkerson, and to be honest, from a year ago's 5-11 team, they don't operate that much worse off.
All right, guys, we'll give you a moment to think about your game changers and your predictions. We'll be back with our final thoughts right after this on Patriots This Week.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam Investments. You, your advisor, and Putnam, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork. And by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
All right, back to wrap things up on Patriots This Week. Before the regular season finale, Pats and Jets and Matt Chatham, who's your game changer? What's the prediction?
Well, game changer for me is actually going to be Mike Gillisley. I think they stay big in the run game. He gets a little more expanded role to see what he can do and help you down the stretch. Big win, though. Patriots 31-13.
Yeah, I actually agree with Matt. I think the running game is going to be big. I'm going to take a game changer on the other side and go with Malcolm Brown. I think he's really played well lately. I think the Jets want to run the ball with Bilal Powell, but they won't be able to, and the Patriots are going to win easy, 33-13.
All right, the Pats are off next week, and we're done until next year, guys. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful new year. See you, Bob. Right. For Matt Chatham, Paul Prillo, Scott Zolak, and Don Banks, I'm Bob Soucy. Thanks for joining us all season long. So long, everybody.
Makowski makes it.